Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank? The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. It's all about panoramic volume and fully fanned out lashes. With its tapered brush, the new Panorama Mascara catches every single lash, giving you the false lash look without any of the hassle. Say goodbye to clumps and flakes, because this mascara is specially formulated to resist them all day with up to 24-hour wear. And the best part? It performs better than Luxe mascaras at only a fraction of the cost. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
This is WGN Television 9.
Channel 9.
Channel 9, Chicago.
Chicago.
Coming to you from atop the John Hancock Building.
Welcome to the world's greatest newspaper television podcast. I'm Brian Say.
And I'm Ross McAbee. If you're a first-time listener, you can catch all the episodes of this amazing podcast anywhere where you get your podcasts. So subscribe, download, listen, and repeat. Or if you prefer a much dorkier podcast, you can check out Marcus Leshock's new podcast. Just kidding. We love you, Marcus.
Yeah, we love you, Marcus. On today's episode, it's a Dean's List A+. He's a Southsider who's been broadcasting over Chicago airwaves for more than four decades. He's a Hall of Famer, inducted into the WGN Radio Walk of Fame. You can hear his buzz on the WGN Morning News. And on Sundays, you can catch him on 7:20 a.m. on his show, Dean Richards Sunday Morning. During the week, you can hear me coughing in the background of his morning radio hits with Steve Cochran. Ladies and gentlemen,
on purpose. Yes.
On purpose, of course. Ladies and gentlemen, it's the one and only.
To be coughing.
It's the one and only Dean Richards.
Dean Richards! He's already upset. Triggered.
He's already triggered.
Completely dust. Free environment, no illness, no neuroviruses.
Right.
Brian just likes to cough during my segment.
Because I want to get on the radio.
Right. And he's already put on his resume that he's doing mornings at WGN
Radio.
Yes,
I am.
Because most mornings he is a part of the broadcast.
You would give me a reference.
With his extraneous.
Would you give me a reference so I can actually get a job at WGN Radio?
To get a job there?
Yeah.
Oh, you don't want to do that. You're much better off just coughing in the background.
You would think there's a water cooler there by the amount of people that congregate around there on 8 a.m.
There's a couple of amazing things. Number one is the amount of time that it took to set up this podcast.
That's number one of the
amazing.
Going on 9 minutes.
Nine minutes of Brian doing this. You ready?
Yep.
You ready?
I'm a nervous guy, and I just got some. I just got some caffeine in me.
Where's my gum?
I need to get amped up for Dean Richards. Hey, get some water. I need some water.
The other amazing thing is when I do my WGN radio segment from 8 to 8:30 every morning on 7:20 a.m. and also streaming live on WGN Radio.
We already plugged it, man. Enough. We already plugged it.
Not enough. That it's quiet back by my desk where I do this every morning until about 7:59 when everyone in the building converges on that area.
That's when my show ends.
That's when Ross is finished.
It's really Ross's fault because I'm there all morning and then me and Lauren are quiet.
Right.
And then Ross, like,
shh, Dean's on the radio. But nobody listens. Yeah. They're just talking, carrying on.
Yeah, they're just talking. They're just talking.
Well, Ross is the one.
Right.
Anyway, whatever.
The third thing that's amazing is that you neglected to mention that I'm in the Chicago Television Academy Silver Circle Hall.
Oh, you know, I had that, and then I didn't really want to dive
into
it.
Do you have any Silver Dome Awards?
That's a big deal.
There were too many other things that I mentioned.
That's a big deal.
That is a big deal.
That's a big deal to be in the Silver Circle.
Well, congratulations.
And I do have some Silver Domes also.
Silver, okay.
Dome. Would you like to talk about that? Do you want to?
No, I just want to. I'm just mentioning that another host might have fully flushed out.
How many times have you bench pressed 300 pounds?
How many times have you bench pressed 300 pounds?
Would I be sitting here if I could do that?
Well,
I'd be in a hospital someplace in traction someplace if I could do that.
All right, let's take control of this interview because he has hijacked it.
He's great. And, you know,
I'm a professional.
Yes, he is.
And I'm used to being, here's the problem.
He's used to being in charge.
I'm used to being in charge.
And you're way better at it than us.
In an interview setting.
You've commandeered this podcast.
I'm a terrible host. I probably should have mentioned to you, I'm not a good guest.
Yeah.
Because I'm used to being in charge.
All right, well, Ross isn't taking action, so I'm going to.
First question.
Everybody listen to me. First question.
I started as a kid.
Oh, my God.
When I was.
This is off the rails.
No, I love it.
Okay.
Take it away.
No.
What's your first question, Brian?
I don't have it.
It was hard-hitting.
Brian's all geeked up on Nicorette gum right now.
This was supposed to loosen you up, Dean, and really just, you know, get you thinking.
Lull me into a false sense of
deep dish or thin-crust pizza.
First question.
Is that the first question?
That was the first question.
Oh, there's not even an issue with that. It's thin crust.
Okay, I thought you might say.
Why?
Without it, it's much more delicious.
Yes.
Square cut.
It's square. Got to be square cut.
Of course.
Not a fan of the triangular cut. It's too messy.
Big. That's terrible.
Number one.
I don't want to fold it.
But it can't just be any kind of thin crust pizza. The crust has to be thin enough so it's crispy along the edges.
Yes.
And moist and delicious on the inner part
Let's order some
pizza. That's how it has to be. I know when I make pizza on the grill in the summertime on the WGN Morning News.
We're going to get to that. But yes.
That's what I strive for.
Yes. And you do a wonderful job, I might add.
Oh,
yes.
Thanks. I wasn't fishing for a compliment.
You were. It's okay. You were.
Yeah, but
you work those interns.
I enjoy. Wait a minute. That sounds wrong out of context.
Well, we're going to repeat that over and over again.
That's going to be the one soundbite.
Yeah.
On
Twitter.
Ross saying that.
You work those interns. You work those interns.
If I have a thick crust, it's Lou Malnati's only.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So I do like Lou
thick,
Malnati.
Thick, not deep dish. You refuse to call it deep
it's
dish.
Thin or thick, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Sure.
Yeah.
Let's do more out of context sorts of phrasings if we can. We like to alienate our audience as much as possible here on the world's greatest.
I prefer cheese other than other
You're
topics.
An impossible interviewee.
Well, I thought if you're going to ask me thin or thick, then you might be interested in my favorite toppings.
Pizza. Yeah.
My favorite toppings also.
Sure. What are your favorite toppings?
I prefer cheese. But
okay.
My go-to is green pepper, mushroom, black olive.
Oh, terrible. That's a nightmare.
And feta cheese.
See, I don't like mushrooms or black olives.
I love black olives. Yeah. I'm with you.
That's a delicious
freaks.
Pizza right there.
Yeah.
It's disgusting.
What's your favorite topping?
I've been doing a lot of
sausage.
This is a controversial opinion in the pizza circles. Pineapple, pepperoni, and bacon. It's got the sweet, it's got the salty.
That's also delicious pizza.
It's wonderful pizza.
I just can't do the pineapple. I don't know.
It's delicious.
Have you tried
with the tomato sauce.
Have you tried
I
it
have.
On the pizza? See, there are people out there who just are purists.
I love bacon, though.
They don't even try it.
How are you about anchovy pizza?
Now, I don't think I've ever had it.
That to me sounds like the most disgusting pizza in the world.
It does sound bad.
Yeah.
But it's actually delicious.
Really?
I like anchovies. Yeah. I enjoy an anchovy.
Okay.
If you had a can of anchovies here right now,
you would eat it?
I would eat the whole can right
really?
In front of you.
Really?
Man, I'm pissed we didn't
then
have
maybe
that.
Maybe Brian could offer you some gum afterwards.
I think Brian needs all the gum that he can get.
I need the gum. For our listeners, I chew caffeine gum, and I do it right before the podcast to try to get me flowing, man.
Yeah. Right.
And that's why I'm just on edge to move through the questions, and it's a little unfair.
See, back in the day, hosts would actually do drugs.
Right, cocaine.
To get motivated.
Probably, yeah.
I hear.
Yeah. Right. You've heard, yes.
That's what I've heard.
Yes. Well, all right. Well, while we're alienating our audience as much as we can.
Have you asked me one question yet?
Pizza. Yeah. And I'm trying to ask the second question,
the
if I may.
Got through the intro.
I'm just trying to kill time.
You don't like Lord of the Rings. What other popular films don't you enjoy?
I would say that Lord of the Rings was not my favorite.
Okay.
Franchise. It's just not my kind of movie. For the same reason, I'm not a big Game of Thrones fan. I think it's kind of cut from the same medieval names that have no meaning to me threat. So while I appreciate that Lord of the Rings were beautifully made and beautiful films, it's not a movie that I would go back to watch. I have no interest in going to see it again. What other popular franchise films do I not like? Was the question.
Because you like Avengers. You like superheroes.
I mean, Avengers. I like all the...
I was trying to get you on the record as having unpopular opinions. That's all. This is a podcast of controversy and stirring the pot.
Oh,
yes.
This is
what we're trying
minutes.
To do.
No softballs here, mister.
Yeah.
This is just like 60 minutes.
So, but anchovies
with,
you like... Yeah,
that's exactly. controversial.
Right, exactly.
That I like anchovies. That's...
Well, off of that, I guess
I like any film that's got anchovies in it.
Interesting.
Oh,
can you name one?
Anchovies that are featured in the movie or any film that's got anchovy in the title.
Sure. Oh, okay.
Which I don't know if there are any.
No.
But that's what I like. I don't know. I can't think of any franchises that most people like that I don't like. I think I like most of the franchises. It's just that I'm not a huge fan of, I guess, that sort of fantasy sci-fi.
Well, that's not the answer I was looking for.
Can you
for,
think
okay.
of a movie that like you reviewed and you had a very strong opinion on and everyone just fought back against
biggest
you?
Biggest backlash?
Biggest backlash, yeah.
That happens almost every week.
Right. Yeah. But the biggest that you can think of.
The one where you thought you were spot on and then everybody was like, "Why? What, Dean?"
Well, see, here's an interesting point, because I never think that I'm spot on. Mm. I never think that I'm right.
Sure.
And everybody
it's all subjective.
Who would disagree with me is wrong. I just think that I may have a different opinion than you have, and that's okay, and the world can exist somehow if several people have different opinions. You know, that's why Baskin-Robbins makes 31 flavors.
Right.
Because
right.
there is something for everyone out
right.
there.
Right.
Mm-hmm. A film that that I had a different opinion than everybody else, I can't think of that either.
Mm. Hmm. Didn't you not like Mamma Mia, or am I thinking?
Oh, okay. Well, yes, there's one. I don't know that everybody loved the first Mamma Mia movie.
I don't think
I guess,
I ever saw
I guess
it.
Most people do, if you like that genre of movie.
Sure.
Whereas I hated it. I couldn't stand it. And I just really, I got sort of a gag reflex. I may need some of your nicotine gum
it's caffeine.
To balance off the physiological response that I just had.
I quit smoking on August 2nd, 2011, 11 p.m., but who's counting or keeping track? The point is, no more nicotine gum. Does it annoy you that Robin Baumgarten calls you Diener on the morning show?
So,
be honest.
The singing in Mamma Mia is really what bothered me. I like the stage version.
We're trying to get you out of here,
I like the stage version.
We have a lot of questions.
I like the stage version of Mamma Mia, but it was the terrible singing in the movie version.
Right.
And if Ross is shocked that good timing is not one of my strong suits... Because every day he has to kill some of my stories because
no.
I've gone on too long. Or the
let's
people
talk about that.
The people
Ross,
who were on
you?
Before me.
Ross,
I've
does
gone
it bother you when Dean
bother
goes
me
too long?
It bothers me when Dean's gone. I mean, he brings a lot to the show. That's the thing.
Wow.
Man, this is you're all too nice. There isn't enough controversy.
The other part of that is it's a balancing act every morning of you have Pat Tomasulo, then Dean, then Anna.
Right.
Everyone wants their time.
Of course they do.
And you have to be equal.
We're all toward the end of
the
hour.
Right, so the time keeps creeping
right.
on
so
and
all
on
the slackers
on.
Who have yammered on
right.
for the whole hour.
Right.
Right.
And now the time is short by the time, you know, Pat gets on.
Right. Right.
And then I'm after Pat.
Yep.
And if we've all gone a little bit long, Anna's got time to go, hey, I'm around town at
whatever
store I am. Bye, I got to go.
Which she always complains about. Oh, really? 30 seconds? I'm like, you're going to take a minute.
Yeah.
What are you complaining about? I can't stop you.
That's true.
Does it
Pierce
you?
Brosnan especially was bad in Mamma Mia. He was the worst. He actually admitted that to me, by the way.
He said that he
when
did
I
a
spoke
bad job.
With him afterwards, I asked him if he was going to be doing another musical, and he said, oh my God, no, I would never do that again. Not after what I did in Mamma Mia.
Hmm. Wow. Hard to be Bond after that.
Yeah. If I think of anything else about Mamma Mia, I'll let you
know. I'm so happy I
I'll
asked.
Jump right in and let you
I don't know if you've asked this question yet, Brian.
I haven't. Does it annoy you when Robin Baumgarten calls you Diener?
No, not at all. Not at all.
Okay.
Should it?
No, I don't know. I was just curious.
Yeah,
sometimes
hey,
people
Diener.
Get pet names for you and you don't
insulting?
Ever really have any say in the
is
matter.
Diener insulting?
No, not at all. I'm just curious.
Just
it's just
take.
Something I've noticed.
Yeah, no, I don't think so.
Opinions.
Yeah.
That, you know, who first was the first one to call me that was Steve Dahl.
Mm.
When I was on the radio, and he was on the radio, and he would make fun of a lot of other people who were on the air on different stations.
Yes.
And he would always, I was like the quintessential, hey, this kind of DJ talking like this, because I was back in those days.
Right.
So he would make fun of, hey, I'm the Diener, and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Like that. So he would, so I don't know if Robin picked it up from that. Or
if you could
from,
talk like that
where it
for the duration of the interview.
Sure. Hey, that's not a problem.
Hey. We're coming to you live.
You've got
to
play some songs. I can talk up the intros before the vocals come
we actually
out. I still have that skill.
We're trying to get issues. A sounder board in here. So like when you say something, you go, yeah, it's be great. So off of that, in your years in radio and TV, which one do you like better? Can you put a label?
I don't think I like one or the other more than one or the other. They both have their pluses and minuses. On TV, what do I get? 3 minutes an hour? Or four, by the way that I count.
Right.
So it's like 4 minutes an hour to squeeze in a lot of stuff, sound bites and all the top stories. On radio, I have a four-hour show, so I can pretty much take as much time as I need to talk to whoever I want to for as long as I want to. So those nice long form interviews, I love that because I can do that on the radio.
Right.
Television is, you know, it's great fun and it's a different kind of creative challenge because I never expected to be on television. It came to me later. And so I, you know, it's just fun to learn how to tell stories in a different way for me. It still is.
Yeah.
When will you be having us on your radio show?
To promote this?
Jot this down.
Well, just, I thought we could be like regular contributors.
Just regular contributors? Yeah. You can come on anytime you want.
Really. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
This Sunday good?
What time are you on in the morning?
Yeah, this Sunday would be perfect.
It would be wonderful. We also would like to promote this, but the regular contributors is more important.
The radio show, in case people didn't hear Brian's incredibly incomplete introduction.
Yeah. Right.
Right.
In the beginning, no, is Sunday
silver,
morning from
dome, dome,
silver
circle,
dome.
The dome or the circle or both?
Emmys.
Isn't a dome a circle?
Emmys was on.
Radio show is 9 a.m. to 1 p.m.
9 a.m. to 1 p.m.
WGN.
Oh, that's late enough
Central?
On a Sunday.
The WGN Radio Hall of Fame.
Is that Eastern?
Where you can see where my name is in the Walk of
Mountain
Fame.
Mountain Time?
That's right outside of Tribune Tower. That's now currently, here's the best part, it's yes. currently covered in scaffolding.
Oh, that's lovely.
Because they're, whatever they're doing to Tribune Tower.
Right.
Oh, right.
To try to bring that building back from mm-hmm. the dump that it was when we were there.
Yeah.
It's all covered in scaffolding right now. So I don't know if our names are going to stay there or
no,
I don't know if they're
going
to move somewhere else.
Do you go out there and protect yourself, shine yourself up at
I
all?
I have done that.
Yeah.
Put some flowers out there.
I think I would, right?
Yeah.
You would go out there.
One time I knew some friends were going to be walking by and I went and got a lawn chair and sat next to my star.
That's awesome. Yeah. Just hanging out.
Yeah.
So you told us a great story about one time when you started in radio, you had a mime on. That kid. tell us that story because
yeah.
that's great radio.
That was fantastic yeah. radio. It was at Navy Pier. It was some remote broadcast that we were doing. And it was a full radio show. And we had Mickey Rooney was on the show that day. I remember the legendary Mickey Rooney.
Big get.
Some other A-listers. And there were two guys in like Cirque du Soleil or some show like that. Might have been Ringling Brothers. It doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
But we had these two guys on who were acrobats. Mm-hmm. And they came on and we talked to them. And I can't even tell you how boring they were. To talk to. They barely spoke English. So I said, so why don't you do some of your act for us? Mm-hmm. And they started doing, it was basically mime. I knew that it wasn't something that was going to translate real well on radio, but they started doing their act. And I thought, well, I can still make this work. I'm a professional broadcaster. I will do play-by-play and explain what they're doing. And it was, the guy in the bottom, I couldn't remember the guy in the bottom is balancing the guy on the top. He's holding him by his head in his bare hand, and he's raising him up to the sky. And, oh, wait, he looks like he might fall. No, he's not going to fall. No, wait, no, and now he's balancing him on his feet. So I was trying to explain what was going on, and it was horrific.
Did you look at the numbers?
By all accounts, it was horrific.
People tuning in?
I didn't want to. I didn't want to look.
Well, honestly, it probably can't be any worse than like listening to sports on the radio. I always listen to, and you're like trying to visualize things in your head.
Yeah.
And they're like calling in, and I'm like, I have no idea what's going on.
Right.
So you probably.
It gives you an appreciation for guys like, Pat Hughes.
Yeah, you have to describe everything.
Like the great play-by-play people of all time who can take a meeting, and they're so artful at explaining what's going on. Mm-hmm. But acrobatics.
Miming.
Mime.
Yeah.
Probably are not the best things to do on for you young broadcasters that are listening right now, and mostly I'm looking
and
at you
in the
right
room.
Now, Brian, I'm saying that.
Yes.
I would suggest avoid doing mimes and acrobats
I look forward
on
to
your show. And at some point on this podcast, you're going to run out of people in this building to talk to, and you're going to start bringing in acrobats.
Once a month. We're cranking these out once a month. There's probably, if you got 300 people in this building, that'll get me through 30 years.
Yeah.
Have you talked to Jericho yet?
I haven't, but we should, and we will.
I think that would be very interesting.
Yeah,
he's the station maintenance man.
Yeah,
right.
He's the man.
Well, mimes aside, what's the worst?
Have you talked to George?
We have not.
Ron Jelancic, I believe is how you say his name. Do you know who I'm talking
about?
Could
you one more time? Yes, I know exactly who you're talking about. Could you one more time?
Have you been up?
I've actually asked him to be on the show.
Have you been upstairs on the third floor where he has his beautiful art gallery? He has an art gallery.
It is amazing.
On the third floor of this building.
I tried to convince him, and he didn't seem like he wanted to. He must have heard the show.
Well, just based on the last 10 minutes, I can't say I blame him.
It's been 20, though, so that ought to tell you something. Yeah.
Time is flying.
Mimes aside, what's the worst or most embarrassing moment you've endured on air?
This was a radio. This actually happened on TV also. But there was a radio interview where I was interviewing a singer who I thought was somebody else.
Oh.
I had prepared the interview thinking that he was one guy.
No.
And when he showed up, it was somebody else.
A completely different
but
guy.
But I didn't realize that it was somebody else until about halfway through the interview.
Right. Oh.
But fortunately, my questions were generic enough that they still applied. But about halfway through the interview, I'm thinking in my head, oh, my God, this is not the guy that I thought this was.
Right.
And I had no specific questions for the guy whatsoever. So the interview fell apart.
What was the guy who you thought it was, his name, and what was the actual guy's name?
Yeah, well, why don't you recall that? I still can't remember who's who. It was, I think it was Jim Brickman, a singer named Jim Brickman.
Okay.
There was a very popular song out then called Butterfly Kisses. It's a big... It's like a song that a father sings about loving his daughter.
Like they play it the father-daughter dance first dance. Yeah.
And it's like a sweet song about the father's love for his daughter, and he loves when he gets the butterfly kisses from his daughter.
Right.
It was really big in the light rock circles that I ran in at one time.
You're still in those circles, I think.
I wish. And it was some other light rock singer. Mm. It wasn't that guy.
Oh. Yeah.
So that song came
up, and then he was kind of like. Yeah,
well, it didn't. Fortunately, I realized that it was the wrong guy before I started asking specific questions about how did you get the inspiration for writing this song? Because that would have been disaster if I would have said, tell me about the song Butterfly Kisses, and the guy would have gone, well, that's not my song.
Right.
And I can't really tell you anything about it.
Yeah. All right, off of that most embarrassing moment, what do you consider to be the greatest moment of your career?
Wow. Well, there's a couple of things. I'm very fortunate that I talk to the biggest movie stars in the world. I have opportunities that most people never have to talk to some of the coolest people. So in that sense, those things are really great. And have been all around the world doing interviews.
Right.
That's pretty great.
Right.
That's pretty cool. I hope that's not the measure of what really is great of the things that I've done. Honestly, and I hate to get serious or sappy about this, but on WGN Radio for 20 years, we did annual 3-hour breast cancer town halls where we sat down with doctors and survivors and for 3 hours on one subject. And those are my proudest moments, really, doing that. And the phone calls that I would get after every one of the shows, phone calls, emails that I would get from people later saying I was listening to the show. I didn't even know that what I'm going through makes me a candidate for breast cancer. I went and checked, and they found something.
Mm.
And if I hadn't been listening to your show that day, I would have never known that I had cancer.
Right.
That's profound.
Right.
Yeah.
Making an impact.
That's profound. I'm pretty proud of that. And any broadcaster that Brian is coughing through.
Yes, of course. Well, that answer makes this next question a little difficult because it's quite the tonal shift.
Awkward transition?
Yes. What happened with Mel Gibson?
Because we've seen the clip.
Yeah.
I don't know if people know the backstory or why. I mean, we know the question.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, okay. Plausible denial. That's okay.
I don't know what you're talking about.
All right.
Which is what Mel Gibson said to me when I asked him.
After the incident?
During the encounter.
Right.
Oh, right.
During the encounter.
Yes, yes.
But leading up to Mel, they're talking about Mel Gibson calling me an asshole on live TV.
Mm-hmm.
He had the movie called Edge of Darkness that was about to come out. And it was the first movie that he had done in quite a long time because he was not doing any publicity whatsoever during the period in which he had had some anti-Semitic incidents come up, where he had had incidents of domestic violence against his then-girlfriend come up. So he wasn't talking to anybody. So now he's got this new movie coming out, and I get a call from the studio saying, do you want to talk to Mel Gibson? And I said, yeah, of course we do. Mm-hmm. It was however months or years that it was that nobody had spoken with Mel Gibson. And I said, yeah, absolutely we do. But I said to the PR person, you know, we have to ask about what's put him in the news, the incidents of anti-Semitism and domestic violence. I'll be polite about it, but if I didn't say anything, it would be wrong.
Right.
It would be the 800-pound elephant in the room. At the end of the day, we are a news station, and we have to talk about these kinds of things. So they said, well, we'll take a pass then. And then I said, that's fine. They don't want to talk about it. We all brought it up ahead of time. Mm-hmm. Fair is fair. They called me a couple of days later and said, we just want to offer you the Mel Gibson interview again.
Oh.
And I said, well, the same
terms apply.
Happy to do it. I'll bring it up in a very polite and very professional way, but we still have to address it. They took a pass a second time. A few days later, they called me back again, and they said, okay, let's do it, but please don't be salacious. Don't be blah, blah, blah. No. So we set up the interview. We're talking with Mel Gibson, mostly about his movie, for about 3 minutes first. We talked about the movie, and then I asked him if he thought that all the things that have happened to him in the last year will affect whether or not people go to see the movie. I think it's a fair way of addressing the question without saying, why did you say anti-Semitic things?
And he
said, I don't know what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. And I said, Mel, you know what I'm talking about. You know exactly what I don't know. I don't know what you're talking about.
Right.
I said, really, you want me to go down the list of things?
Yeah. Mm.
I don't know what you're talking about, man. And he kind of leans in that very menacing Mel Gibson, I'm about to rip your face off kind of look on his face.
Yeah.
He goes, I don't know what you're talking about. I said, you don't know what I'm talking about anti-Semitism or domestic violence or... I went down the list of all the things that I was perfectly willing not to mention, but he practically begged me to. And I don't really remember the nuance of what happened during that. I remember he said that, do I have a dog in the fight? I guess he was asking me, am I Jewish?
It was something like that was 4 years ago or something, right?
That's Let's move
over,
on.
Done with, move on, or something like that.
And I said, well, that's why I'm curious if you think your fans are going to be.
Right.
So anyway, the interview, to say that it ended awkwardly is mild. Mm-hmm. And he thought we were off the air, and we were not, when he took a sip out of his Starbucks cup that I maybe was filled with coffee, might have been filled with something else.
Right.
I don't know what was in that cup. Took a sip, turned away, and said,
asshole.
And my mouth dropped. I was shocked.
But you've made up.
When it happens.
Since.
Well, we've encountered each other a couple of times since then. Mm. Interestingly, the first time that I saw him after that, I didn't know if he was going to remember me or... if, you know, that meant, you know, that whole thing, it did get national press within about 20 minutes. My phone's ringing off the hook from every major news organization around the world wanting to talk to me as the guy that Mel Gibson exploded on. A couple of years later, it's an opportunity to interview Mel Gibson again for the film that he did with Vince Vaughn, the film that he directed. That was an Edge of Darkness, by the way. That it was a great film. He's a great actor, really great actor and really great director. And I was going to set to interview him again. I didn't know if he was going to interview me, remember me. So when I went into the room, I put my hand out to shake his hand. And in the most massively manly grip that you could possibly imagine, he grabs my hand and is shaking it. And again, just dead staring me in the eyes. And not letting go of my hand. You know when a handshake goes a little too long?
Yeah.
He's shaking my hand and staring bullet holes through me.
Mm-hmm.
And finally he let go. And we had a very fine interview. And I've interviewed him since then again. So it's not a big deal. I mean, apparently to him, not a big deal. It's not to me. It was when people who were fans of Mel Gibson, who you might categorize as white supremacists, mm-hmm. who supported some of his unpopular views, started contacting me with death threats and some pretty serious stuff. The most serious of which was we just had twins born into our family, and one of them was named after me. So I was pretty proud of that. And one of the white supremacists said, "Oh, you're such a big, courageous guy. How would you feel if we took a brick and smashed the skull?" I had posted the picture of the twins on the web, and somebody said, how courageous would you be if we smashed the head of one of the twins?" So honestly, that's the biggest thing that I remember from the whole Mel Gibson thing. It was just silly and stupid, and showed how silly and stupid people can be out there who were reacting to it.
Right.
Yeah. Now ask me a silly question, Brian.
No, it's Ross's turn. Yeah.
No, going off of that, that was one of the things that interested me, is you go on all these junkets, you talk to actors. It can be tough, right? I mean, depending on which ones, like, how do you go through the actual act of, like, warming them up, talking to them? I mean, you're, right? You, I mean,
all in about a period of 5 minutes.
Right. Yeah, you get there.
Yeah, you show up to the interviews, and more often than not, it's the movie studio has taken over the whole floor of a hotel.
Okay.
And in the cast of the movie are in different rooms, and the different entertainment journalists take turns going into the different rooms to interview whoever it is. So you show up, and you go in the room with Mel Gibson. You do a quick 5-minute interview. I mean, there's no warm up. I mean, fortunately, I've been doing this long enough now that most of the people know me. So I sort of walk in with a little bit of, you know, the credibility, I guess, or, you know, familiarity.
Yeah.
You go in, you do your quick, it's about 5 minutes that you have. So you get right to the point. There's not a lot of time for goofing around or, you know, whatever it is. You leave, you go to the next room, do the same thing. You go to the next room, do the next room. There's usually 6 or 7 rooms between A-list cast members, B-list cast members, producers, directors.
And do you choose who you're going to talk to?
No, you have to. Required to talk to everybody. Gotcha. They want you to talk to everybody, and they want you to run the interviews with everybody.
Yeah.
Not everybody is as interesting as everybody else, so not everybody makes it on the air. So it's a little crazy, and sometimes you have to get across town to go to a different hotel and do the same thing with another movie, and then come back to a different hotel and do a third movie, and then get to the airport and get back home, get things edited. So
a lot of times you're doing it on weekends on your own.
Almost
time.
Always, A lot of times I edit the interviews on my laptop on the airplanes because I'll do interviews on Sunday and have to be back on the air on Monday morning, so try to get things done anytime that I can.
And we're always like, "Hey, Dean, you get to go to L.A. Oh, you're in Hawaii.
It's so much fun."
And then we're waking him up at, you know, I don't know what time it is in Hawaii, and he's got his earbuds in doing a Skype for us like these.
Right.
That's good fun. That's good fun.
So speaking about the glamorous nature of all of this, tell us about the time you stayed at a motel in the Hamptons. Producer Tyra Martin told us all about this. Do you not recall?
I remember that we stayed at a pretty crappy motel.
Yeah,
we were. It was some interviews that we were doing for the CW. Mm. I don't remember what show it was, but they were doing the interviews in the Gossip Girl. I think it was Gossip Girl, and they were doing the interviews in the Hamptons. And my producer Tyra Martin and I drove up from New York into the Hamptons, stayed at this horrible hotel. Different rooms where
thank you for the clarification.
We were both pretty sure that we were going to be murdered at this hotel.
Yeah.
I think she was a little more concerned with being murdered than I was.
Sure. Okay.
I have a little more of a history of staying at crappy hotels because if I'm just traveling on my own, that's the kind of hotels that I like to stay in.
The seedy underbelly.
Seedy underbelly, ice machine and candy bar machine on every floor.
Sure, yeah.
That's the kind of joint that I like to...
Yeah. Open air, nice and airy.
Open air.
Yeah. Cigarette stain burns.
Magic fingers beds.
Yeah, yeah.
come in with some quarters and you get that magic fingers bed going to town.
Right. Yeah.
But did she say that something specific happened?
No, she that was a little background. Just said that
it was an adventure because
it was glamorous.
Normally,
is what she said.
Right.
It said in the most sarcastic way possible, right, because normally we stay where the stars stay.
Right.
That's a pretty nice thing. So yeah. We stay at the Four Seasons and the Mandarin Oriental and the Ritz, and we stay at some pretty nice hotels. So when we, go to a hotel where we've been assigned to work, and it turns out, you're pulling up your car right to the door of the motel room.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty
right,
different.
Right.
Okay. It's pretty different.
So tell us about who haven't you interviewed that's on your list, and can we see your list? Tyra said you have a list.
A physical list?
Of people that you want to interview.
Tyra lied to you, though, when she said that.
She didn't say specifically that you have a physical list, but she implied that there was a list.
Oh, but that's a good way to phrase the question, because then, like, tricking me into saying that if I do have a list like that, and here it is in my pocket.
Right.
I'll just show it to you now.
Can I see it?
I don't have a list, and
Was there anybody that, big that you're like, oh, man, I'd like to sit down with
them? I gotta say that I think, that's what I was saying before, that I feel like I'm pretty fortunate that I've pretty much talked with anybody that's had a movie out in the last 25 years I've talked to. You know who I'd like to talk to that I have never interviewed is Sean Penn.
Mm.
Oh. He hasn't done interviews with local press for a long time.
Yeah.
And although I think it would be crazy, because I saw him recently with Conan O'Brien, and I was sweating bullets for Conan O'Brien because he's such a free thinker, I guess is the nice way to say that somebody seems crazy when you talk to them. I enjoyed how crazy it was and how in control Conan stayed.
Right.
Amidst all that madness. And Jimmy Kimmel also just interviewed him not too long ago. And I don't know if he was drunk or not.
Mm-hmm. Oh, but Sean Penn or Jimmy Kimmel?
Sean Penn. Sean Penn. But I would like, I've never talked to him. So sure. I guess I would like to.
So it's a short list.
Talk with him. It's Sean a pretty Penn. Short list.
That's awesome.
I like talking with the legendary actors. And I can't really think of any right now that I haven't talked with.
Mm.
Yeah.
I talked with Dick Van Dyke not too long ago,
a
year ago. That was awesome.
Yeah.
Talked to Clint Eastwood not too long ago. That was awesome. I mean, I like those a little more. I would like to talk with Tommy Lee Jones because he's...
I've heard he's a tough interview.
He's he's famous for being the most difficult interview of anybody. As Harrison Ford put it, Terrible Tommy, as he called him.
Does he not talk, or is he just...
He purposely taunts interviewers.
Yeah.
The first time that I interviewed him, I had heard that he was difficult, so I went in kind of with my battle gear ready.
Right.
But as I was walking in, these hotel room situations, one reporter's walking out while another one's walking in. A young female reporter was walking out of the room with Tommy Lee Jones in tears. She was crying.
Mm.
And as I was walking in, Tommy Lee Jones was sitting there with his people laughing. And he was saying, boy, I got her good. Didn't I got her good? So he does it on purpose.
Yeah.
You ask him a question, and he'll either give you a one-word answer or,
right.
If you say, tell me why you decided to do this movie. Well, why don't you tell me why I should have done this?
Wow.
He'll throw it back in your lap.
Yeah.
I don't know. What do you mean by that?
Yeah.
He'll just throw it back to you and throw you off your game, or if he just give you a one-word answer where you're expecting a sentence kind of get your next thought ready, anything. He will purposely try to throw you.
That's tough.
And, as an interviewer, nobody likes long pauses.
Right. That freaked me out.
Didn't it?
I liked the moment we shared. We were making eye contact.
We were making eye contact.
I was like, do I need to jump in?
Comfortable.
That's when you're the interviewer.
Right.
Your inclination is to jump in right away when there's a long pause like that. And Tommy Lee Jones does that to throw you like that.
Right.
But I was prepared and I was ready. I didn't jump right back in. I just let the long pause be even longer by waiting and trying to make him uncomfortable that I wasn't responding back to him.
It
was really fun.
Yeah.
It was really, really a lot of fun. So most people dread talking to Tommy Lee Jones. I actually love it.
Okay.
Yeah.
My favorite with well, your interviews going off this is Jeff Goldblum. You recently did. Is he one of your favorite?
He's absolutely one of my favorites.
Ridiculous.
He's one of my favorites because he's nuts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In such a good way.
Right.
In the best way possible. Right. He's such an interesting, nice guy.
Yeah.
But you do not know what is going to happen during a Jeff Goldblum interview.
Right.
Is that where he read my palm, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Didn't he read my, he read my, look at your, you have a lot of baggage. You have a lot of mileage. A lot of mileage.
There was something else he did. I can't remember either.
He's the greatest. He's been among my favorites. Tom Hanks is always one of the best ever. The fact that he did that stupid walk that we did down the hallway of the famous
walk
of Tom Hanks characters that he agreed to do that was great. Meryl Streep is one of my favorites in that I'm so impressed that the most famous movie star in the world is so nice and normal and polite.
Right.
And what really gets me, when you walk in the room, she stands up and greets you.
Oh,
hello, Dean.
Right.
And shakes your hand, stands up like a person who is actually raised with manners.
Right.
Like a human person.
And she's Meryl Streep. She's Meryl freaking Streep. She doesn't need to do that.
Paul Conrad's tried to teach us that we should stand up when people walk by.
Did we do that when you came in? I think we were already standing.
It freaks people out.
No.
We were already standing.
Turned your backs, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
Sure,
he's here.
Paul wouldn't like that.
So we'd be remiss if we didn't talk to you about Bozo. I mean,
according to Wikipedia, in 1998, you were instrumental in having a stretch of Addison over here by WGN named the Bob Bell Way. So tell us about that. And
that didn't sound like you were reading at all.
Yeah.
That was a flawless
Well, transition. I was just trying to get it in. I really wanted to say according to Wikipedia, and Ross wasn't clearly going to read it. So anyway, talk to us about
I guess people don't
know.
Does
that make it less credible if you say according to Wikipedia?
Well, that's the joke.
Yeah.
Because anybody can write whatever they want.
It doesn't matter.
So did you do that?
I did.
So now it's confirmed. Okay. We'll go.
Yes, I did. Bob Bell is one of the most legendary figures ever in the history of Chicago broadcasting. The Bozo Show on WGN remains the most popular local children's program in the history of the medium, and that is in large part because of Bob Bell playing Bozo for 24 years and the amazing cast that he had with him of Ray Rayner and Don Sandberg and Marshall Brodeen, Roy Brown, Ringmaster Ned Locke, Frazier Thomas on the show, all these legendary characters on this great children's TV show. But Bob Bell was just, he was the greatest, one of the greatest performers ever. And one of the greatest guys. He didn't take himself seriously. When he passed away, I did a 3-hour special on WGN Radio. I wanted to pay tribute to him because I thought he deserved it.
Right.
And he was very, he never liked to do personal appearances as Bozo. He never used his Bozo-ness to promote himself. He was a very unassuming person, and I just thought that he deserves a lot of credit. He did a lot of things. You know, it was Bob Bell's characterization of Bozo that a young Dan Castellaneta saw when he was growing up in Oak Park and sensed that there was a little darkness to these characters when Dan created the voice of Krusty the Clown on Homer Simpson. It's based on our Bozo show.
Yeah.
So
right.
Who doesn't love
Makes
a Bozo
right.
for,
right.
you know, for something like that? So, yeah, we petitioned whoever the alderman was in this ward back then, and we got a part of Addison between Western and Tallman has been honorarily named after the great Bob Bell.
What's it like? I mean, you're a Southside kid growing up. I mean, I know you went to the Bozo show when you were little. Now you're walking down that same hallway every day. We have to walk down a very long hallway, but very you go long. By.
There's a series of long hallways here at WGN.
Yes.
It's like an M.C. Escher.
Yeah, and trap doors.
Painting. Trap doors. Right.
Look out.
Yeah. What was that Matt Damon movie where it's nothing but fake doors and long corridors? The Adjustment Bureau,
I think. You should know that.
I think it was called.
Yeah. Yeah.
I haven't seen that one.
That's the other. I have a terrible memory for old
movies.
Yeah.
Okay. Well.
People ask me, hey, what's that movie where the girl ran? And it's like, once it goes down all the conveyor belt for me, I'm pretty done.
Right.
I'm on my new crop of movies for this week. But yeah, you know what? I think about that almost every day when I walk in down that long hallway. I see a little 10-year-old Dean standing in line outside of Studio One where the Bozo show was done. And we came on a field trip all the way from the South Side, from 81st and Yates on the South Side, Edward Cole School. Our fourth grade class came up here, and we watched the Bozo show, and we had a peanut butter sandwich in the bus, on the brown bus, before we went back. I was almost picked for the grand prize game by the tips and tips only of the Magic Arrows.
Yeah.
There was a girl sitting next to me who got picked instead. Where I learned that life isn't fair.
Yeah,
that's the day I learned that life
was the first time.
Right.
That was the Bozo show.
That was my
and
first
yet you
time.
Came back to work here.
Yeah, despite the fact that I have three older brothers, and you think I would have would have learned that life is not fair well long before that.
Yeah.
The it's powerful. When I first started working here, and the first time that I walked down that hallway, it blew my mind that I was in this building. And I think I even commented to somebody, it's like, somebody's made a terrible mistake by hiring me. It's like,
that's
I'm
what
pretty
Ross,
sure I shouldn't be here.
That's what Ross and I tell each other every day.
Yeah, like, right.
What are we doing
someone's
here?
Someone's going to look through and go, he's working here?
Right.
Oh.
Don't you get that?
No, I really do, yeah.
I think you ought to get that sense on your job. It's what am I doing here?
Right.
What am I doing?
And we get to the things we get to do.
Right.
Yeah. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
It really is.
I mean, there was.
And they enable us to.
This is just one of many, many, many examples on the morning TV show. I forget. Carmen Electra was on and she was promoting a shaving cream or something. And Larry Potash lathered me up and was shaving me.
Mm. What should we ask where? No, that's not.
I can show you some pictures.
Okay, all right.
Later on,
we'll post those on the web.
Yeah.
Sorry, Larry.
And all I can think of while that was happening was, this is the only thing on WGN right now. This is this legendary, monolithic broadcast institution with Jack Brickhouse and the greats of broadcasting.
Yep.
And what's on the air right now? One guy is shaving another guy.
Yeah.
Paul
Conrad
right
turning
now.
That on.
Paul Conrad sniffed my armpits last year.
I remember,
I was thinking the same thing.
I
am now. This is my contribution.
I give Paul a lot of credit for that.
Me too.
Yeah, I mean,
I didn't shower that morning.
I like it everything, but I'm not sure I would sniff your. I don't think I would sniff any of my fellow employees' armpits.
He's had
armpits.
To take a lot of days off after that. Yeah, he's taken a lot. Just to recover.
That's why he takes off so much time.
Yeah. Oh.
That was the impetus.
Therapy.
Yeah.
Yes,
therapy.
Probably.
Or sniffing other people's armpits.
He's had to go to a lot of different people.
He's gone to the well and now he can't stop.
A lot of experts.
So many specialists.
Yeah, I have to go to his house every night and he just...
Just for a sniff?
Yeah, right.
Wow.
All right, well, so it's time for the lightning round.
Yeah, lightning round.
We're going to ask you some rapid fire questions and you need to answer truthfully.
You have time. It's a lightning round.
It's the lightning round. It's going to go fast.
You ready for this? First question. Favorite movie of all time?
Godfather.
Ooh, least favorite
one.
Movie.
Godfather 1.
Least what? Favorite.
Is Ford Fairlane, Andrew Dice Clay.
Oh, okay. Favorite band of all time.
Is, band or performer, musical performer.
Whichever,
Tina Turner.
Okay. For Pat's show, Man of the People, you pretended to be Billy Joel and fooled dozens of people.
So who plays a better Billy Joel, you or Billy Joel?
Oh, there's no question that I do.
Oh, I'm glad he got that
Has
right.
Has he ever walked down Michigan Avenue and enjoyed it? And
that was amazing.
Breathed it in? I have.
Walked right in.
Come on, real Billy Joel. Take a walk down the Magnificent Mile one time.
What do you do with all that Victory Auto Wreckers money?
Yeah, is it in a bank somewhere?
That would be
in your walls?
That would be my. It's in my Swiss bank account.
Oh yeah,
okay.
Offshore.
I have a lot of offshore accounts with that $25 that I made that day.
Nice.
Nice. He handed the money right to you. You can see it.
That guy, the tow truck driver, he got his $25. I got whatever the daily rate was for being an announcer.
10%.
A one-time payment. I've figured out that it's $25.
Did you get a per
diem? That I made for a commercial that has been on the air for...
Yeah.
Since 1991. That's when I did it.
I would have signed a contract, but that's just me.
Yeah. Bad deal.
What's it like driving a tank?
It's the most awesome thing that I've ever done in my life.
You can thank us for that because we helped
get
that going.
I know it. I've never felt more like a man in my entire life.
When you cook out back, I beat up the interns for your fixins. What led to your love of cooking?
I'm Greek.
Okay.
And I'll just ethnically profile myself that we seem to be, we seem to favor that. I like it. I enjoy it. It's relaxing.
Yeah.
Okay. I enjoy it. I enjoy the creating it.
Yeah.
And I enjoy everyone's reaction that they love it so much.
Nice. If you were to invite Brian and I to a party at your house, what would you make us? What's your go-to dish?
I know Brian loves the pizza.
Yes.
Okay.
Brian loves pizza on the grill.
But
and that is
black olives.
That is
no
my
black olives,
go-to with pineapple, now I know. And
okay.
When
I forget whatever else.
When will we be invited?
Well, it's too cold.
What's
right
your
now.
Address?
It's too cold.
What's your address?
I'm not.
Is that the
come
alarm?
On.
That's the hint.
Give the address.
Saved by the bell.
Give the address.
If you could just give us your address.
I was about to give you my address.
1234 Easy
until the alarm went off.
Like Memorial Day weekend.
That'd the alarm. Great. The alarm means I have to go do the midday show.
Dean, thank you so much.
Right
it was an honor.
Dean Richards.
It's my honor. I actually enjoyed this.
Oh, yeah, okay, that's good. Actually, a lot of people say that at the end. It's crazy.
And it doesn't seem like they're serious, but you sound serious.
I enjoy
And also, we want to thank you. You really are our biggest fan. We do a lot of dumb stuff, and you're always very positive about everything we do.
You encourage us.
We appreciate
that's
that.
What does that
good
say
thing.
About me?
Right.
that's not really a very high
enabler.
Not
and
really
we love
high
you
compliment
for
compliment about me.
Thank you for your praise.
And you can listen for Brian and Ross on my WGN radio show
starting this Sunday, and for all
we're
the rest of the Sundays.
Yeah, right. Slot us in.
Yeah, perfect.
Thanks, Dean.
Thank you, Dean.
Yeah.